Chapter 15. Peacemongering. Tyrus felt a pang when he awoke. In the moment before his mind had adjusted to Vaedrus, he felt the absence of Soria by his side. He laid a hand on the empty side of the bed and felt the blankets. They were cold from the lack of body heat. Tyrus found that he was fully dressed from the previous day as he pushed himself up to a seated position on the edge of the bed.
"I wonder if these smell of demon,"
he mused as he changed into fresh clothing. The outfit from his trip to Azat burst into flame and was ash before it landed in the fireplace.
"Details. Keep atop the details and I shall keep ahead of him. Burning my clothes is no more paranoid than going about with a shielding spell up constantly after all."
Tyrus looked at himself in the mirror and saw bleary eyes and unshaven scruff. "Are you real too?" Tyrus asked his reflection. "Another world inside the glass? I dare you to do anything but mimic me." But the image declined his challenge. He adjusted his shielding spell until it covered the skin of his face, but left his nascent beard exposed. With a swipe of his hand, he incinerated the tiny hairs. He shook his head as he considered how long that whole process used to take him in Scar Harbor.
"Tanner should be delivering Anzac Fair soon. It is a long coin wager, but if Jinzan gives up the staff, I might just stand a chance against Roshan."
Tyrus broke the mirror's gaze with a small effort of will. His mixed vision showed him a room that was a fortress of ether. He could not see out through his own wards, and nothing, that he knew of, could see in. He was alone, that reflection in the mirror the only thing that even gave a semblance of companionship. Tyrus gave a long look at the empty spot on his bed next to the impression where he had lain.
"I should tell her to keep the book. I can find another copy, or maybe Juliana can read the key parts and Soria can relay them to me."
Tyrus released his wards. He was prepared to start his day with a bit of library browsing.
"There is too great a risk of Roshan returning without warning, while..."
"Good morning," Roshan greeted him in the moment the door opened. Tyrus's thoughts splashed to a puddle at his feet as he lost hold of them. Tyrus drew before he knew why he was doing so. Roshan's eyes widened in response.
"Wait!"
Tyrus held up his hands in apology.
"Gut me! Would you kindly send someone with a source to fetch me if you must see me before morning feast? I'm used to seeing anyone beyond the door before I open it. Good morning yourself."
"A case of fraying nerves?" Roshan asked. He held out a hand to the side and a small tray of morning pastries. Bacon and tea floated to him from a waiting cart. "A case of expecting Jinzan Fair to break into the palace one day to settle his grudge with me, more like," Tyrus replied. It was one of a handful of lies he had prepared to defuse quarrels with Roshan. That quiver now held one fewer arrow.
"You sleep soundly from what I hear."
"But I would hope you would awaken at the shock of a transference spell," Roshan said. Tyrus looked over the morning feast options and selected a meal. "I know I am certainly aware of them." Tyrus stopped, a strip of bacon held in both teeth and hand. He bit it in half, chewing as he waited for Roshan to continue. "Go anywhere fun? Anywhere I might enjoy hearing about?" Roshan asked. Tyrus waved him into the bedroom and shut the door behind them. "I had a hunch about where that Magren might be hiding with the staff of Galen," Tyrus said. He put the rest of the slice of bacon into his mouth and washed it down with a swallow of tea.
"Oh, where did you think he could have gone?"
"Azat," Tyrus answered. Roshan froze. "I figured that they do not tolerate outsiders. If someone could convince them to make an exception, it would be an ideal refuge."
"And?"
A plan was trying to form in Tyrus's mind. There were pitfalls aplenty when lying to Roshan. But played well, it could be more valuable.
"Just enough of a lie to cover the incriminating truths."
"I met with Zizix. It seemed like he was the only one there who spoke Kadrin," Tyrus said. Roshan's expression turned to ice. "I gathered that you two had a falling out some time ago, and he seemed none too pleased for me to be there. He never threatened outright violence, but I could never be certain of his intent. I made my excuses and got out of there as soon as decorum allowed." "Did you manage to discover anything of use?" Roshan asked. Tyrus saw what looked like relief on the demon's face,
I should know better than to assume he really is. If he can feign drunkenness and friendship, why should I believe any reaction of his?
I got a lot of old history about immortals and gods poured into my ears. I heard him call the Azadians my children enough times to wonder if they might all be blood descendants. He told me I was never to return to Azat, and that he would be less than cordial if I did. Between here and there, I asked a lot of questions and got answers that had no bearing on them. It was like trying to eat soup with a fork. Well, that can be expected. Most immortals have little better to do with their time but waste the time of others, Roshan said. I never did manage to learn the joy the others take in elaborate idleness. I studied, I practiced, I learned. I felt idle by my standards, but I did more of substance in a season than any of them did in a dozen winters. Zizix might be an exception, of course, but who knows how much effort he actually puts into running that kingdom of his. Still, you should not be disappointed by your failure. Just walking away from that place with your head on is a victory of sorts. What was it that you came to see me about this morning, anyways? Kyrus asked. He filled his mouth with half a pastry.
Well, to make you aware of my return, and to find out where you had transferred from in the night, Roshan said.
Kyrus nodded, still chewing. Good, he replied as soon as he swallowed. Then I think I will get on with my day. Thank you for the morning feast. You know how to find me.
Kyrus stepped past Roshan and grabbed the door handle.
We have an empire to save, right?
Kyrus smiled as soon as he was out of sight down the hallway. The dumbfounded expression on Roshan's face was worth the effort.
You guess for once, Roshan. Enough of playing for a stalemate.
The sounds of the sea were soothing. The rocky shoreline of southwestern Gelk was an idyllic spot to await the arrival of Anzik and the traitorous Tanner who had flown off with him. Jinzan sat on a wave-smoothed boulder that would have been submerged had the tide been in. Of late, Jinzan had been around so many chemical elixirs and rotting corpses that his sense of smell had gone into remission, or else the salt air might have cheered him as well. Days had shifted into nights and back again in the crypts, and he had remained hunched over crumbling pages and flesh laid bare of skin. He had learned to block from his mind the physical hardships of sitting motionless on a hard stool for a long time, along with fatigue and hunger. So, too, he had warded away the pleasant kiss of sunshine that warmed his face, though the brightness bothered his eyes. He sat and watched the shadows move among the tall rocks. He watched the tide approach, wave by wave, over hours. The gulls that circled the beach grew incautious of him. So little did he resemble any creature they were used to seeing. One suffered for its folly when, within arm's reach, Jinzan reached out and pulled its source free. Jinzan fed on the ether within and flung the corpse into the water, not even bothering to practice his animations. A creaking in the air whispered of a ship's riggings. The Kadrin airships were based on their own primitive sailing ships, nothing so sleek and powerful as the Fair Trader. But Jinzan knew a ship when he heard one. He did not turn, but saw the massive shadow flicker by and blur into obscurity over the water. He did look up then, and saw what he expected, the vessel that should be bringing Anzik back to him. He switched to the ether and welcomed a respite from the sun's glare. Aboard the ship, a few sources stood out, but none like the small one that had to be his son. "Welcome home, my son," Jinzan said. His hoarse voice barely rose above the shushing of the Aliani Sea. He set the butt end of the staff of Galen into the wet sand and rose to his feet. The tide washed lightly over his shoes. He saw it, but felt neither coldness nor wetness.
I wonder if I can unlearn this once Roshan is dead. What good will three wives do me if I can feel nothing of them?
The ship circled low and came to a halt a few dozen paces away. Its keel just a man's height from the ground. A rope ladder was thrown over the side.
Ahoy! A voice called out.
Jinzan had grown so weary of that voice that he had hoped never to hear it again.
I have him, and we're coming down!
Good as his word, Tanner was over the ship's railing a moment later and climbing down the rope ladder. As soon as he was on the ground, Anzik followed. Jinzan felt a surge of relief spread through him at the sight of his son, who had been gone nearly a season. There was a smile within him, but putting a hand to his face told him that his lips were not complying. Still feeling along with his fingertips, he forced his expression to match his mood. Anzig looked more attentive than when Jinzan had last seen him. He turned his head to look at the world around him as he set foot on the sand. He was dressed in Kadrin clothing, which was both dark and gaudy. Getting him some more appropriate attire would be among the first things to do when they returned to Lan Mai.
"Father!" Anzig called out and began running over the rocky ground to meet him.
Jinzan expected to see him stumble at any moment, given the difficult footing, but the boy managed without incident. Rather than embrace him, which would have been both awkward and out of character, Anzig pulled up short at a respectable distance.
"Father, you don't look well."
"I'm fine," he told Anzig.
"I wish I believed that myself."
"Thank you for bringing the staff of Galen back to me.
I'm sorry it took me so long to bring you home."
"You didn't bring me here, Tanner did," Anzig argued.
"Ah, but I arranged for him to do so," Jinzan said. He noticed Anzik's gaze wandering to the staff he held. Jinzan's hand tightened around it.
"Well, I've done my part,"
Tanner called out as he ambled along the beach toward the Fayers. Jinzan had no expectation that Tanner would trip on a rock and split his skull, but he found himself hoping that the annoying swordsman would.
"Any chance of you giving up that staff so we can call off the whole war? Maybe kill a demon for you?"
Jinzan let it appear as if he were giving the matter some thought. He held the staff aloft and turned it parallel to the ground, presenting it to Tanner. The Kadrin soldier looked skeptical, but approached anyway. As Tanner reached out for the staff of Galen, Jinzan grabbed him with ether, holding him fast.
"No, I think not," Jinzan replied.
He looked into the confused, frustrated eyes of his son's deliverer. "But neither do I plan to kill you." Jinzan's gaze wandered over to the Kadrin airship. It was hovering in the breeze, tugging against the line of the anchor that lay in the sand. Jinzan left Tanner immobile and walked toward it.
"Father, do you want me to show you the airship?"
Anzig asked. The boy had trailed after him like a puppy. It was one of the few conversations he had ever initiated with Jinzan.
"It's wonderful. I think you would like it. It's just like a boat, but it flies."
Jinzan studied the sails as he drew closer. The arrangement was a monstrosity by seafaring standards, but he could see some logic to it for sailing the skies.
"They rid themselves of a mast because they draft nothing but clouds. That crossway spar must be for steering. Rudder is probably too small to matter in the air. Looks cobbled but effective. It will do."
The crew of the Kadrin airship scrambled. He heard shouted orders and gathered that they were well prepared to abandon Tanner to his fate, rather than attempt a rescue.
Pragmatic. Same old Kadrins.
Jinzan watched them raising the sails and began plucking the sources from the sailors one by one, slowing and eventually halting efforts to get the airship skyborne once more. Jinzan picked himself up with a levitation spell, always a clumsy endeavor, trying to keep his own source from rebelling against the ether's indelicate handling of it. He turned to pick up Tanner as well, towing him through the air to bring him onto the deck. Anzik took his own way, following back up the rope ladder. A sorceress confronted him.
"What do you..."
Jinzan ripped the source out of her as well, not even bothering with pleasantries. He took the entire crew and emptied out their living sources, refilling them with ether he controlled. Of all who had arrived on the Kadrin airship, only Tanner and Anzik were spared.
"Father, the staff lets you do that too?"
Anzik asked. "No, the staff merely makes it easier. The control is mine, the staff but a tool."
"Oh,"
Anzik said, sounding disappointed.
"Well, I guess we will have to figure out how to fly the ship ourselves. I didn't pay a lot of attention to how it worked, but we need to pull those ropes over there to lift the sails. Then use magic to make the wind blow in the direction we want, if it isn't already. I don't know where we're going. Then use that wheel over there to turn the other sail. Oh, and we need to pull those other ropes to raise that one first. And then we can use that to turn the ship, so we can go in the direction we want. The runes, there, there, and there, Anzik pointed. Do things like raise the ship and lower it. They might do some other things too, but I wasn't really paying attention. Sorry.
Anzik shrunk back after his apology, as if expecting a reprimand. Jinzan smiled then and did not need to feel his face to know it.
Thank you, Anzik. That was what I suspected. Have no worry, though. We do not have to fly it ourselves.
Jinzan worked his ether into muscles and bones, reigniting dead sources in otherwise intact bodies. He cut the ethereal tethers loose as he reconnected the minds of his new slaves. They began rising from the deck as he completed each one.
Oh, Anzik marveled. Let me try one.
Before Jinzan could think to stop him, Anzik Fair rushed below deck, already drawing ether. There were bodies below as well, but Jinzan had yet to reanimate them. Jinzan's instincts told him to go after the boy, but after a single step he stopped himself. The boy is a natural. He remembered how Anzik had reanimated his own pet dog when the beast had died. Muffled grunts drew Jinzan's attention back to Tanner, who was lying on the deck, clamped in Jinzan's spell. Jinzan released the swordsman and he gasped for breath, able to expand his lungs fully once more. Jinzan watched him for a moment and considered confiscating the Kadrin's sword, but decided not to.
Harmless enough.
I suppose you know better than to try to escape or do me any harm, Jinzan said.
Tanner pushed himself to hands and knees.
Rotting bastard, I almost suffocated, Tanner managed between gasps. What kind of deal is this?
The kind where you have robbed me of one hostage only to provide me another. Denric may have been at risk if you had tried to slay him, but I am no Denric Zane. You will be perfectly safe so long as you work to bring my son's twin to me. However, I cannot risk returning you to Kadrin. Let Kyrus wonder where you have disappeared to. I will not risk him discovering where I have been all this time, Jinzan said.
You pukes willing dog. You're as bad as the rest of them. Denric at least had a little decency. Give a fella too much magic and it happens to all of you, Tanner said.
He spat on the deck.
I can just have someone clean that up, Jinzan said.
Without a word, a dead sailor walked over and pulled a cloth from his belt. The dead man bent to wipe Tanner's spit from the deck without complaint, and without his attention wandering from the task to glance at Tanner.
Nice to know your side keeps up tradition, Tanner joked.
Jinzan knew him well enough to hear how afraid he was of the dead sailor's proximity.
Lorimar would be proud.
Ah, Mr. Tanner, you show yourself to be a man of learning at last, Jinzan said. I had despaired of ever having a proper conversation with you. You at least learned your battles.
Yeah, Tanner said.
He pushed himself away from the cleaning corpse before climbing to his feet.
But you must know how that turned out for Lorimar. I mean, Rashan Solaran was as famous for the Necromancer Wars as anything, and he won all three of them.
Lorimar never had this, Jinzan said. He tried to raise his voice, but it came out choked.
Father, look! Anzik called out from below as he made his way up the stairs. His name was Sazan, and he shared his bread with me.
Behind Anzik came a boy about his own size, with a vacant look in his eyes.
I saw how you were putting the ether back into the broken men, and I did the same to fix Sazan.
I'd like separate quarters for this trip. I don't even care where you're taking me. Just keep this crew of yours well clear and I'll be no trouble, Tanner said.
Excellent, Mr. Tanner. I like you better in this world already.
You must be running short of important folk to bother about all this drivel, Exterian groused. Hardly a word to me a 10 day at a time, but someone slaughters half the Empire's simpering bootlicks in the inner circle, and you're here daily, is that it?
Something like that, Kyrus admitted.
Exterian snorted.
Besides, you make a lot of sense. I think you play at being senile because you prefer being left alone. I need you.
About time someone did, Exterian replied.
The old sorcerer bit a strawberry in half, tossing the leafy cap into a bowl with a dozen others like it, and chewed as he spoke.
You got yourself quite a quandary, though. Got near to everything you asked for and don't know what to do with it now.
Well, we have peace now, but Rashan is going to be around constantly. I need some way to find the information I need without being obvious about the search. I never imagined he would drop the war as if it were a game of chess he had grown bored of, Kyrus said. He eyed the bowl of strawberries, but decided against the distraction.
You and that girl of yours are together in the other world, right? Axtarion asked.
Yes.
Maybe you can have her read you the book, Axtarion suggested. Keep a copy of it over there, maybe. Your grandmother always kept her really confidential information written down there.
Axtarion paused for a moment and turned to frown off into the distance. He scratched at his head.
At least, she told me she did. No real way to be sure, of course.
That might work for one book she has, but what if it lacks what I need? I suspect it does. I would rather not have Roshan stumble across me reading up on demons and how they might be killed, Kyrus said. He laced his fingers behind his head and leaned back in his chair. The front legs lifted up off the ground. Axtarion scratched his head.
Well, you can find some other cause to send him off after. Of course, he's like as not to start killing everything that comes at him from the corner of his eye. But at least it wouldn't be you.
I just got him to stop warring. It would have to be something entirely different.
You can get lackeys. I've always been partial to those, but good ones are hard to sniff out. Most of them get snapped up quick as biscuits, soon as they show any worth. You can train them up if you know what you're doing, and what to look for in a raw one. Or you could try poaching. You know, buy one from someone who can't pay as well as you can afford. Of course, that doesn't get you the loyal ones. Best is to find someone with potential that other folks are overlooking. Preferably someone who has some ideals to hedge against greed. Fearless if you can manage it, since you don't want a lackey that can be bullied, Axtarion said.
Kyrus could begin to picture what he must have been like as a younger man, still in full control of his ether. A strong high sorcerer who commanded respect and obedience, who had once helped right the sinking ship of a Kadran empire that had made many enemies, one that had lost its warlock protector.
You know, I think I may just know where I can find someone like that, Kyrus replied.
Oh, where? Axtarion asked.
The old man waited. Though Kyrus knew him to be nearly blind and reliant on ether vision, he still kept the habit of pointing his eyes where his attention lay. Kyrus waited under that milky, vacant stare until realization dawned.
Oh, no, you don't. I'm retired. I draw a pension from the Imperial Circle and everything. It's all very official. Besides, I was High Sorcerer for 3 of your lifetimes with enough summers left over for an academy education. I'm well past being anyone's lackey.
Covert researcher? Kyrus suggested. I can be flexible on the title.
It's not just the title.
You mentioned your pension. I could certainly find a way to get you an honorarium for your services, Kyrus offered. And I act with the Emperor's authority, so on technicalities, I outrank the High Sorcerer. This would not be a demotion, High Sorcerer Axtarion. Grandfather. Kyrus corrected himself when he noticed the old man frown.
Thought of everything, have you, smarty boy? Axtarion asked, raising an eyebrow.
It was an expression that likely had carried more weight when it had more than a few wisps of hair left to it.
No, not at all. The whole of this was your idea.
Bah!
Axtarion slouched back in his chair and crossed his arms. He snatched another strawberry from the bowl, bit it in half, and threw the leftover leafy top at Kyrus.
Do you think you are up to the task? Your performance at Founding Day seemed to show your faculties are fully recovered. But what about the rest of you? Roshan asked.
The warlock sat perched on the table next to Phaelin in one of the palace's sitting rooms.
I am recovered, certainly. Who is to say whether I am equal to the task?
Does anyone know Brennus's limits?
I doubt even he does, Phaelin argued.
He fidgeted under the demon's stare.
Several times a day the city shakes with his transferences. You are the only other one I have ever heard of using them besides him. Not even Dolvain trusted them. But he bumbles about most of the time. I doubt he knows a dozen proper spells. Can he see us even here, from halfway across Kadrus and through warded walls? Yes, point taken. But I shall brook no cowardice. You are one of my unfettered, even after your failure with the staff of Galen. Besides, this is Brannis. He might take up his sword in battle against goblins or ogres, but he quails at the thought of killing humans. You are more likely to die by accident around him than by his design. He held Dulvane and Caladhris both by the throat for nearly a season, and played them against one another rather than destroying them, or even just putting them before me to handle. What in particular are you trying to determine? If you could tell me that, I might better recognize what I see, Phelan said.
Rashan looked away, allowing Phelan a moment's respite from the intensity that rarely left the demon's eyes.
He is clever. Oftentimes I underestimate him, even knowing that. He runs much of the Empire by my arrangement. He has as good a strategic mind as I have seen, even if he lacks the stomach to plan ruthlessly. He helps me at every turn, and his advice has always proven sound. He has turned me from my intended path more than once, and I have seen that it was the right choice. Still, for all that, something in my gut tells me that he might still harbor some plot against me. That maybe for all the tangled schemes that I caught Caladhris and Dulvane in, Brannis might have sacrificed them as pawns in a plot one layer thicker, Rashan said. Vexed was not often a word that could describe the warlock, but the adversarial relationship with his disciple Brannis could make it fit him.
I will do what I can. He will be suspicious, you know.
Not if you are as good as you tell folk. A lot of rumors return to me. I have ears under every floor, Rashan said.
If you have so many ears, what do you need with mine? Phelan asked.
I employ hired ears aplenty, but there is a shortage of brains between them. You are a sorcerer and twin-born, and you managed to conceal the latter for a very long time. Just trail him until the first day of summer. That ought to be long enough to satisfy my worries, Rashan said.
The warlock put a hand on Phelan's shoulder. He stiffened, afraid to move.
Oh, and are you still traveling with that Magrin boy's twin? Rashan asked.
Yes, Phelan swallowed. He had avoided entanglements between worlds for so long, only to end up caught in the worst net into which he could have blundered.
I want to see something.
Rashan removed his hand from Phelan's shoulder and placed it on his forehead. The starlit marauder drifted in bright sunshine, shielded from view from the ground by dark storm clouds below it. Everything was dripping from their ascent through the rain. Along the ship's railing, Yushika's children watched the clouds below, oblivious to the wetness. Juliana watched them anxiously, expecting one to fall overboard at any moment. They chattered to one another in Safshan, pointing, shouting, laughing. They knew that their father was alive, though Juliana had omitted Teba's bargain when she relayed the story to Yushika. With that one worry laid to rest, they were enjoying a grand adventure.
Yushika came up from below with an armload of morning feast foods for everyone.
She had taken the news in stride, unsurprised that Teba had fought off the infamous demon who had plagued their land. She called out to the children. Some of the words were likely names, but Juliana understood only a word or two, and nothing that lent meaning to the interaction. Instead, she judged by the children's reactions. They scrambled from the railings, the sky's wonders momentarily forgotten in the face of mealtime.
"Do you worry about them playing on deck?" Juliana asked.
She took a strip of salted smoked pork, one of the few morsels that the children had not grabbed in their frenzy.
"No, they are children, not fools," Yushika said.
"They are not so small that they would jump off. Mushina would scold the younger ones if they began to get rowdy."
"Do you have some place you can take them?" Juliana asked. "I don't know how far the war has spread, but I can take you anywhere."
"I have family in the north."
"Fine then, north we go," Juliana replied.
"What about you? Do you not have to return to Kadrin?" Yushika asked.
"I'm not sure when it will be safe to go back there, if ever."
A crash of thunder boomed beneath them.
"My whole life is upside down," Juliana thought.
Jinzan sailed carefully. It was as alien an experience as he had ever encountered, sailing amid the clouds. The sea was in his blood. It was familiar and reliable.
The Katamic Sea held firm to the contours of a well-crafted hull. In the air, the winds leapt suddenly, taking the Cadran airship along, unwilling. The Black Gull flew askew in the currents, its stern always twisted slightly to the starboard side. Despite the quirks of navigation, the airship's captain and sorceress were keeping it on course. All the dead seemed sluggish in their movements, a resigned, plotting sort of existence. It reminded him of Denric's fellow inmates on Relis Island.
The dead feel no pain? I wonder if I will find that they do, after all.
Anzik came over to him. The boy had been poking about the ship, examining both it and the crew since they had taken off. The boy stopped before Jinzan, looking at him with bald curiosity. Jinzan thought to ignore him, but Anzik was his son, not some underling to be brushed aside.
"Anzik, it is rude to stare. Go find something to play with or read," Jinzan said.
"Someone wants me to tell you something," Anzik said.
Jinzan looked at the boy once more, fixing his gaze to the ether.
There was nothing that he could see influencing the boy.
"Someone is influencing his twin?"
"What?" he asked.
"Well, it's more of a question, really. So I think they phrased it wrong. They should have asked me to ask you something, not to tell you."
"Just tell me what it is," Jinzan snapped.
"He wanted me to ask if you've been playing with Lorimar's books," Anzik said.
A pensive look scrunched up his face and he paused.
"So, have you been playing with Lorimar's books? Oh, and who is Lorimar? That was my question, the last one there."
"Anzik, who is the one asking?" Jinzan felt a twinge of pride that he had managed to remain calm despite his suspicions. His heart had not raced, neither had his breath quickened.
"Me, I just asked you," Anzik said.
"Yes, but who is asking you?"
"My apprentice," Anzik said with a smile. "He's just like me, but doesn't know magic."
"No, that is not what I mean. Who wants to know?" Anzik shrugged. It was a gesture that signaled a blind canyon of inquiry.
"Oh," Anzik added. "He also wants you to know that he is still planning to come retrieve your skull, and that you shouldn't fall asleep. Do you have a skull that you're planning on giving someone? Can I see it?"
Anzik squeezed his eyes shut, shaking his head. He wobbled on his feet, then slumped to the ground, fast asleep. Jinzan scooped him up in his arms and carried him to one of the crew quarters below decks. His spell had robbed Anzik of his wakefulness, and Roshan of his puppet.
"Filthy demon, leave the boy out of this."
Roshan laughed as he pulled his hand away from Faolin's forehead. The coolness of the demon's skin had left no sweaty imprint, and a welcome sense of relief. Back in Tellurak, Windel released Jaden in the same manner, allowing the sleepy boy to return to his bed. The demon spell had taxed Wendell's source to its limits, but he had been able to see through Jaden's eyes and Roshan through his own.
"What did all that mean?" Faolin asked. "Why ask about Lorimar?"
"Well, did you not notice that the crew were all living corpses? Someone has been practicing necromancy, and there's no better authority on the subject," Roshan explained.
"I thought you hated Lorimar."
"I have no quarrel with books, whoever wrote them. Besides, I have a healthy respect for the shriveled old death herder. No one has ever posed a greater threat to the Empire."
"Do you really think that Jinzan Fair is trying to become a necromancer in the mold of Lorimar?"
Faolin asked. It occurred to him then that he had not just revealed Jaden's sight to him, but Wendell's in the process.
"Possibly. He is certainly trying his hand at it, wherever he is getting his techniques.
If he had found any of Lorimar's research, though, it would seem that Gelk would be the likely hiding place for them."
"The Grand Necromancer's crypts were all found and destroyed after your final victory. The Circle saw to it as part of the peace treaty," Faolin said. "I would suspect that somewhere there was someone else who tried to replicate the process."
"Well, I just happen to know someone who was around for those treaty negotiations. I think it may be about time I pay him a visit."
As soon as Roshan had gone, Faolin slumped back in his chair. He reached for a decanter on the side table, pulled the stopper, and drank his fill without so much as checking to see what it was.
Axterion was sitting with his feet soaking in a sulfur-salted basin,
and a pipe in his mouth when Roshan arrived. The smoke and water warmed and soothed him at both ends, but his demon granduncle put a chill in his belly.
"What brings you to my bedchambers, old man?"
Haxterion greeted Roshan.
"Did the rumor get free that I was better company than I have been letting on? I just chased Brannis out of here not long ago. Talked my ears raw."
"No preamble this evening. I can appreciate that," Roshan said. He lifted a high-backed chair, toted it across the room to face Axterion's footbath, and sat down. "You answered at least one of the questions I came here for. I had heard Brannis spent much of the day here, but I knew not why. He took you into his confidence, then?"
"Confidence? Confidence would have been if he had taken my advice over that bloated son of mine. I think I am more of a last resort. You're too busy to while away the day yammering over a bowl or two of strawberries with him. Me? I'm slow-moving, and got nothing better to do with my days." "Worse yet, he knows it," Axterion complained.
He blew a long jet of smoke from his nostrils. "Well, it is nice to know that Brannis has someone to confide in. I came about another matter," Roshan said. "How much do you remember about the end of the Third Necromancer War?"
"Why does everyone always assume I don't remember anything? After my fifth or sixth springtime, I have a fair recollection of my life, you know."
Axterion gave the warlock his best crotchety face and dared him to question his memory again. "Well, fine then. You oversaw the destruction of Lorimar's strongholds, did you not? You made sure that all traces of his necromantic work were piled up and burned?"
"Between you, me, and the walls? Nah," Axterion replied.
He winked at Roshan, teasing him before revealing his reasoning. It was going to be entertaining working for Brannis if folks started visiting more often.
"I had to burn most of it, for appearance's sake, of course. But I was a right bastard in those days, and I had a glut of mean in my blood. Wasn't feeling too generous toward those dome-dwelling death puppeteers. I took a good look through Lorimar's notes and research, and torched the best bits of it. I left the rest, though. Enough to get someone in a heap of trouble if they tried it with all the precautions, remedies, and workarounds gone to cinders."
"Do you think it possible that someone is reconstructing Lorimar's work from those leftovers?" Roshan asked.
"No, entirely impossible," Axterion quipped. "Can't see how anyone would have read a bunch of books, done what it says inside them, then replicated the results."
He shook his head. "Why might it have taken this long for someone to uncover the secrets? Have you heard reports of a major necromancer emerging while I was away and covered it up?" Roshan asked. Axterion sneered, annoyed that the demon had ignored his sarcasm.
"Well, if you must know, I gathered everything up in a single crypt. Books, papers, trinkets, and gewgaws. Then I put a ward up on the door. I'd looked at enough of Lorimar's works by then to be able to do a fair imitation of his rune carving. It was sloppy for someone with his reputation, so I embellished a bit with some proper cadran forms. Made it good and strong, too. Built it to last. I modeled it after the one from your own chamber door. Didn't want any stray washerwoman, rat-catcher, or second assistant arsewipe apprentice getting delusions. I wanted to snare some real potential madman. Do a bit of good by my little trap."
"Well, I think it just may be that you caught someone at long last," Roshan said.
"About time," Axterion said.
He had been gesturing with his pipe as a prop, but stuffed it back between his teeth and gave a curt nod. "Now what was it that you and Brannis spent all day at?" Roshan asked, shifting topics on him.
"Boy has himself all puzzled up over that demon. That other demon, that is. Not generally one to get fussed up over trifles, but I think this one worried him a bit. He'd gone asking about getting that volcano-plugging staff back, thinking the Magren who took it might be hiding out in quaint, friendly little Azat. Instead, this old friend of yours goes on an hours-long tirade about you. The other immortals gets the old gods mixed in. Mind you, did any of them immortals mention meeting him? Anyway, he tried to remember as much of it verbatim as he could."
"Did anything come of it? Could you infer anything from what Brannis told you?" Roshan asked. The demon was leaning forward in his seat.
"A few things. First off, this Zizix chap is mad as monkeys, as they say. I wouldn't trust him to cook my dawn feast, let alone find important magical artifacts. He's also a liar, which I am beginning to think might be the defining characteristic of a demon. No offense, but you tell unseasoned truth roughly once per summer snowfall. The bit about how you get thrown out of the immortal's little village was entertaining, but I can't say I can put much stock in it. It certainly sounds like something you would do, but that's the mark of a good liar. I imagine a few thousand winters' practice is enough to make anyone a good liar if they try.
What version did he tell? Rashan asked, reclining in his seat with a narrowing gaze. If it was supposed to have been an intimidating look, Rashan was going to have to stop looking like a schoolboy from the academy. Axtarion had taught there, and 16 winter boys had given him such gazes that they might have hurled fire, gazes not so unlike the demons. It was hard to take him seriously.
Something about an immortal that disappeared. You and it had a dispute, and it told this Zizix that if it went missing, you would be the reason. Just seemed too dratted convenient that only Zizix got the message, Axtarion said.
Brennus's idea of light truth is a load of fun. It's just like spitting cherry seeds out of the truth and sweeping them under the rugs so the servants don't see you doing it.
It was his word against mine, so all they could justify was a temporary parole. Banishment, so to speak. I have not worked out whether Zizix killed him and hid the body, or if Bavatrain, the one who went missing, just decided to play hide from his lordship until they executed me for his murder.
Nah, my wager is still on you having killed the poor demon, Axtarion said.
The two eldest sorcerers in the Empire shared a chuckle